Every film has a producer and an executive producer, and a name you'll see often in Sundance Films is Gerilyn Dreyfuss. She's the co-founder of Impact Partners, as well as the founder of the Utah Film Center. She joins us now in the studio. Good morning, Gerilyn.
Good morning, Leslie.
So as executive producer, is it just a role of funding the film, or as a producer gives you kind of more of a hands-on?
Well, at Impact, Dan Kogan and I, my partner, we try to executive produce each of the films that we finance. So one of us is sort of more hands-on than the other. And it is about bringing resources to the table, but it's also about troubleshooting. It's also about late-night coaching just helping put the most creative team of people and ideas together for the film.
Yeah. So how many films did Impact bring to Sundance?
We have 5 films here this year.
And that's about average for you, right?
Well, I could hardly say that, but last year we had about the same. I mean, we were lucky to have as many films this year.
Yeah. Can you tell us which ones those are?
Sure. So we have Web Junkies in the World Doc competition, and then we have E-Team, which I just heard you plugging, which was exciting to hear on the radio.
Hey, John says best one of the fast.
I know. Yeah. I'm so excited to hear that. Well, that's Ross Kaufman and Katie Chivanche, and Ross and I came here 10 years ago with Born into Brothels. That was our first Sundance film, so it's kind of exciting to be back with him and a new team and the E-Team. And then we have Alive Inside, which is just thrilling. It's just, I think, blowing audiences' minds right now. Just a very emotional, beautiful film about Alzheimer's and music and memory. Overnighters, which is Jesse Moss's film, beautiful, poignant film. And we had our first feature film this year called Land Ho, which we just sold to Sony Picture Classics. So that's a game changer film, not an impact film. So, but we're working the streets on all of them.
Yeah, and that was what I kind of think, because it seems like you do mostly documentary films, and that doesn't have the return on the investment like a blockbuster would. So,
right.
I mean, how do you manage that?
And you used 2 different terms there, I think, probably very intentionally in terms of impact film versus game changer. Talk about that a little bit in terms of what's the difference.
So Game Changer was a fund that we started. It's our first film as Land Ho. We really started it after misrepresentation in Gina Davis's research that looked at 6% of the movies in Hollywood being directed by women. And we thought, that doesn't seem right. You know, and we really wanted to look at what is the cost and authenticity and diversity and discovery. Not even parody is one thing, but we also just wanted to look at sort of voice and where original stories come from. So Land Ho is all of that. It's a young director. It's a very smart, authentic, original script. And it played really well for audiences here. So we sold it to Sony Picture Classics at a nice return. And in the feature business, you really have to have a slate of films in order to kind of make money and assess your risk. Whereas in the documentary business, there's still enough broadcast outlets that you can do one-offs so that our investors can actually choose the films that they want to invest in. We bring them a couple of films every 6 weeks that we think are going to be commercially and artistically and successful, as well as have a big social impact. So on the documentary side, we tend to break even for our investors and just return the money so they can get into another film. Whereas in the game-changing slate, we're hoping to actually prove that women directors are not only viable but very commercially successful. So it's a different lens that we're applying. Our social lens is women.
So when you decide to help fund a film, I mean, do you have a certain list of requirements that people have? I mean, that you require of them?
Yeah, I mean, filmmakers, we look at 500 films a year. And we're always looking at, you know, the artistic merit of the film. Like, how is this story being told? Has it been told? Does it have a commercial outlet? You know, does it have an audience? Has it been told before? And will it make a difference? And how will it make a difference? So those are the criteria that we look at when we're looking at our documentary slate.
Mm-hmm. Now, with like the Alive Inside, that was one of those that I did get to see. And it's just this Dan, you know, just this guy off the street trying to help people through music. And I don't really know how he did it other than he turned on a recording one day and saw the reaction to somebody. Where would that film go? I mean, they talked about, you know, getting it to distribution, you know, so that everyone can see and start making their playlists for their folks and things like that. But right. I mean, where does that go?
Well, you know, we've had some interest in broadcasters and mm-hmm. theatrical outlets. I think it's a movie that plays very well. It's a very emotionally. It works on so many levels. Both everybody has somebody that's aging, that and dementia is an issue that we all worry about as we grow, as we're aging longer. But it's also a film that really touches you deeply because of music, and it reminds us of how music is so encoded in our memory and in our kind of emotional intelligence. I mean, it plays, I think, on both spectrums. And I think the idea is that if music really can have this impact, why wouldn't we want music? Why wouldn't we want an iPod to be reimbursable the way a cane is, right? Like, why wouldn't that be something that we bring to the mix in our medical care, especially if it is cheaper than antidepressants and drugs that are making people drool, right? I mean, that seems like a more civilized way to enrich and enhance an older person's life.
So can Impact Partners take that then one step and somehow raise the funding for the iPods that are needed?
Well, we're doing that. I mean, we actually had a screening with community leaders, and we had a $100,000 pledge we've actually had meetings with the local business here that makes headsets that we were trying to get them to become part of it, you know, and we also want to do a screening for Senator Hatch, who's on the Health and Human Service Committee, and his particular interest is aging and senior care. So, I mean, that's what's so great about Sundance is you have a film and then immediately you see this algorithmic, you know, launch into the world just because of the people that are here and the people that can make a difference and connect the dots.
Yeah. So, like with Alive Inside, you know, we've got kind of an issue-oriented. Overnighters, on the other hand, is just something that you watch and see unfold. So where's the future for something like that film?
Well, we've had some offers on a theatrical release of that film. I mean, that is just an astonishingly intimate, quiet, observational film. I mean, to me, it plays like a novel, right? It plays like a it's just an epic story of what happens in a small town, you know, when people descend upon it, and there's in the fear around some people that are different and people that might not be like them, and what gets confronted in a church. It's a very American story. I think a very, kind of a classically American story.
Yeah. And in terms of like Land Ho, you think that will actually have some theatrical release later?
Well, it was bought by Sony Picture Classics, okay, so it's actually on its way to come out in the world at some point. We don't have the dates that it will be out into theaters, but it was bought. So it was a big sale, and it was a huge victory for a small indie film.
Yeah. And there continues to be a lot of internet chatter, I think, on the panel discussion earlier this year. I think it was like Spielberg and Lucas who went off about how hard it is to get access to theaters for the smaller pictures. And invariably, you always hear that every year and year. It's getting harder, harder, harder. You know, is the sky falling, or, you know, are you an optimist in terms of these additional outlets, not only broaden the access points for the fans of these films or viewers of these films, but is it marketable as well in terms of can you... You know, I mean, obviously that's the world you live in, but
yeah.
In terms of, I mean, are you an optimist moving forward or?
I think theatricals are changing. I mean, what we do at the Utah Film Center, I think, really is the future of how people are going to see films. I don't think we're going to see booking films, you know, for weeks at a time, 5 days, five times a day. I think you really have to curate the content you're bringing to theaters, and, you know, smaller films might come in for 3 days, but they might come in with a subject of the film or a conversation built around the film. And I think audiences really need to have more of a reason to come to our theaters, and they have to be salons, and they have to be town halls. They have to be places where people gather so that they can exchange ideas, and it's more interactive than passive, because you can get content anytime you want now. So, you know, there really has to be a reason why you show up at a theater, and a big screen is a great reason, and so is a great sound system, and so is good popcorn, but also the kind of connective tissue around finding your community and being in a culture of people that love ideas or want to discover something. And then that sharing, I think, is what you, the culture you need to build in the theaters to make them stay relevant.
So the Focus Film District merger isn't necessarily doom and gloom, like IndieWire, I think, called it the art house vending machine might be the result or something like that. I think the perspective is that hopefully the theaters continue to book perhaps at shorter runs, but recognize the marketability of the broader film palette, if you will, that will keep a larger segment.
Yeah, I mean, I think I think the theater's job is to grow audiences. That's what we need. It's just the same way the symphony's job is to grow audiences, right? Or the ballet's job. It's their job to get people into their theater. They're competing with a lot of things. And you do that, I think, by making the content accessible and but also kind of reaching out and finding your natural constituents, which I don't think theaters have ever had to do. They've just relied on sort of advertising. And we don't have that. You know, thank God we have a film critic like Sean Means. But, you know, we're losing a lot of channels that sort of help people understand why they want to come see something that might not have a lot of marketing dollars behind it. So we're having to use, you know, deploy a lot of new strategies to get people to still pay attention to the work that's being done.
So what are you working on now in terms of some films?
Well, the two films I'm most excited about that I'm executive producing, one is about the first woman director. It's set in the 1890s. It's Alice Guy Blanchet, and it was a Kickstarter sensation, director by the name of Pam Green. And it is really telling the history of cinema, but it's doing it through sort of a detective way. She's discovered films. She's restored some of her silent films. And this is a woman that was so ahead of her times. I mean, she really had ideas like Skype and Netflix in addition to sort of the moving picture. So it's going to be fun to kind of reclaim her voice and her place in history. And then the other film that I'm most excited about is called Sounds of Satchel, which is a Pakistani woman director who did Saving Face, won an Academy Award for Saving Face. And it's really about the history of jazz in Pakistan and how it went underground. So it's sort of a Buena Vista Club meets reading Lolita in Tehran. It's just going to be gorgeous. And my dream is that it comes to a big festival and the screen goes up, the curtains open, and it's live jazz for the first 20 minutes. And then the film is shown after that, with that. But that's also another film that's gone viral with Kickstarter. They did a version of Take Five with Dave Brubeck when Dave Brubeck passed, and 10 million people heard it. And so Quincy Jones and Winston Marsalis have kind of rediscovered this underground jazz group. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful film. So we're hoping to have that next year here or at some major festival.
Yeah. And real quick, I mean, the Utah Film Center, I mean, I've never been. What do you guys do there?
So we bring films year-round, and we bring the filmmakers, the stories behind them. And we do a lot of outreach with nonprofits that have natural connections to the content that we bring. And we also bring a lot of new audiences, and we bring the films to schools. And it's really an opportunity to sort of think about the creation of good storytelling, and it's driven by media literacy as well as by really great storytelling.
And you have two films with Tumbleweeds trying to appeal to children this year's festival, so that's a great new partnership. Has that worked well?
It's been so exciting. Patrick Hubley's had the vision for this idea for years, and I really feel like with Sundance giving it a dedicated platform, children's storytelling or family storytelling will, and the global, the great stories from different parts of the world, our American audiences will get a chance to be exposed to great stories from around the world in a way that they never have before. And they've kind of been the neglected stepchild of festivals. And now I think that there's a chance that people will see how great these films are for families.
Right. Well, Geraldine, thanks for spending some time with us this morning. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks for having us.
Geraldine Dreyfuss is the founder of the Utah Film Center, also co-founder of Impact Partners. KPCW News Time, now 9:40.
Welcome back to the groovy Pledge Drive of Love game, round two, the challenge round. I'm your host, Grant Wishes. Larry Warren has the next question.
What are the five locally produced, award-winning public affairs shows weekday mornings at 9?
I start listening when the radio alarm goes off, but that darn snooze button gets me every time.
That's okay. You can hear the podcasts, Mountain Money, This Green Earth, The Mountain Life, Cool Science Radio, and Fun Friday online at your convenience. Support these podcasts by pledging
the week of February 10th through the 14th. Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longreimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com. Brett Stimson, Mortgage Assistant for Home Purchases, 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.